Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. This hour, we look at the hyper-partisan, divisive world of Washington politics and how one congressman is trying to use mindfulness, meditation, other techniques to cope with his colleagues, his constituents, and possibly solve some of the nation's problems. Tim Ryan is in his fifth term in the U.S. Congress. The Democrat represents the Youngstown area. He's the author of a new book, A Mindful Nation, How a Simple Practice Can Help Reduce Stress, Improve Performance, and Recapture the American Spirit. Congressman Ryan, welcome to All Sides.
Good to be with you.
We'll get to your book in a moment, but I'm going to do my best to put you in a bad mood, so we'll talk shop for a few minutes. You serve on the House Budget Committee.
I do.
That's the big story right now in Washington, aside from the health care law. Congressman Paul Ryan, no relation, I take it.
I've heard of him.
Proposed his budget cuts taxes, cuts entitlements. It would convert some Medicare payments to vouchers for private insurance. It would convert Medicaid funding, the health care for the poor, to block grants to be administered by the states. But also, it would have some tax cuts, as I mentioned. Democrats are pretty united in their opposition to that plan. What do you think of it?
Yeah, same. I mean, you know, you're voucherizing the Medicare program to where the voucher will go up, say, 2 or 3%, while health care costs go up, who knows, every year, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9%. And so that voucher over time will become worthless. And you're sending our senior citizens into the shark tank with a voucher to try to get insurance. And I think that's really just a bad idea. And when you look at states like Ohio, there's also huge Medicaid cuts, which will be up to a third of the Medicaid budget under Paul Ryan's budget, under the Republican budget, will be cut. So our seniors in Ohio who go into nursing homes, who rely on Medicaid, will all have to somehow figure out how to bear that burden. Plus, there's no preparation for the future. There's no investments into alternative energy. There's no investments into education at the level that we need to make college more affordable. So all of these things, it's really a budget with no vision for where America needs to be.
So how do you balance the budget? I mean, there's the Erskine-Bowles plan there. It would cut spending by $200 billion, raise taxes or close tax loopholes, if you will, by $100 billion, raise the Social Security retirement age. Mm-hmm. Is that the answer? Nobody seems to be wanting to go that far either.
Well, I think we got to have some honest discussions. I think if you think you're going to get there without revenue, you know, you really got your head in the sand, because you got to ask the wealthiest in the country who have done extremely well to help us solve this problem. It's not that we dislike them. It's not that it's class warfare. It's that over the last 30 years, their incomes have gone up dramatically. And so we need to just not only balance the budget, and there are going to be some cuts, but if the programs I believe in are going to survive, then we've got to have a balanced budget over time so that interest payments on the debt don't eat up all of the money that we should be investing in education and healthcare and research and development. So it's got to be a balanced proposal. And quite frankly, they can't get that through the Tea Party caucus in the House of Representatives.
The Medicare changes that Paul Ryan suggests, Democrats, no doubt, during the fall campaign will use it in ads that we're ending Medicare as we know it.
Yeah.
One liberal Democrat told me, yes, we have to end Medicare as we know it because it's going to go broke. It has to be fixed, correct?
Of course. You know, part of the problem with Medicare, most of the problem with Medicare is the problem with health care. We're not administering the health care system properly. So I know, especially up in Youngstown and Akron, you have a lot of people that are 55 or 60 years old. They've lost their health insurance. They can't afford insurance. So they put off problems that could be managed at a much lower price, much lower cost, until they get into the Medicare program. So from 55 until you get into Medicare, their problems are getting nothing but worse. Then they get into the Medicare program and the costs are going up. So healthcare reform was to make sure that those folks have some preventative health care so that over time will reduce the cost of the Medicare program. So things like that, of course, have to be a part of the solution in the long term.
We're speaking with Congressman Tim Ryan from the Youngstown area. He's got a new book out about being mindful, how a simple practice can help reduce stress and improve performance and recapture the American spirit. We'll talk politics for a few minutes, and then we'll get to that. How anxious are you about the Supreme Court and whether or not they uphold the Affordable Care Act? What is your prediction?
You know, it's out of our hands, really. I mean, it's into the hands of the justices. And as as much of a reach as I think it would be. It wouldn't necessarily surprise me that they would do it because the court has turned into a real political arm, quite frankly, of the Republican Party.
Does that kill health care overhaul fixes for another 15, 20 years if they do away with the even just the insurance mandate?
It's really hard to tell because there are a lot of people now that are benefiting from it. You know, if your kid can't find a job, and that's what we're seeing, young kids today in their 20s can't find work, but they can stay on their parents' health care until they're 26, they've recognized the benefit of it. Seniors all over the country have saved on average of close to $1,000, $900 to $1,000 on their prescription drugs because of the health care reform. That will go away. Preventative care. Now, all of a sudden, seniors and others will have to go get preventative care. There will be a copay where the Affordable Care Act made sure there wasn't a copay for preventative care so that it would be incentivized. Mm-hmm. These will all go away. Pre-existing conditions. You know, once again, the insurance industry will be allowed to say deny you health care coverage because of a pre-existing condition, regardless of if whether you're pregnant or whatever that case may be. So I think it actually may lead to some blowback because now people are starting to benefit from the reform, see what the reform actually did for them to help them, and could build a real coalition for maybe even a broader healthcare reform in the future should it get taken down.
Or at least a nice message for Democrats, correct me if I'm wrong, for the fall campaign if it does get overturned. That's the speculation. It's the president and Democrats like yourself will say, we tried Supreme Court. Partisan Supreme Court overruled us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If there's millions of people out there that we just passed something that was going to benefit them or was benefiting them, and the Republicans came in and advocated for it to be taken away and it was taken away, then those are just the facts on the ground.
Should it, I mean, it comes down to this insurance mandate, and the basic consensus is, had the president and the Congress gone for, you know, in the extreme, a single payer system, mm-hmm. or at the least called it a tax instead of a penalty, mm-hmm. That you'd be on more solid constitutional ground. Any regrets that you didn't try to go farther to a single payer?
Well, I think the political reality is the political reality, and I think single payer was not in the cards politically, and so, you know, this was the best we could do. But I just do find it completely ironic that the individual mandate was a Republican request of years ago, for years, as to how we fix this problem. Is get everybody recognizes you got to have everybody in the game. You can't have free riders on the system who show up at the emergency room sicker, and then you or I or some of our constituents will have healthcare walk in after them, and they got free coverage, and the cost of that coverage from the doc, from the hospital, from the workforce all gets pushed on to the next person who walks in with health care insurance and drives up the cost.
But
that just doesn't make any sense.
The president didn't support the individual mandate when he was running for president. He was more for the single payer, more of a Medicare for all thing. So everything kind of comes around. You thought about running for U.S. Senate in 2006. You've been mentioned as a possible candidate for governor in 2016. Are you going to run for governor?
Oh, I'm not sure. You know, I got the book out, and like my focus over the last year or two has been being a congressman for my district and getting the ideas in the book out. So when we get through this election, we'll see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So not sure. It's not bad. I'll take that answer.
You take that?
I have no intention of running for governor is kind of what I expected. Though Richard Cordray, Ed Fitzgerald, the Franklin, Cuyahoga County Executive. What are your thoughts on them?
Both great guys. Both great guys.
Should Ted Strickland run again?
If he wants. Ted's a dear, dear friend, and if he decides he wants to run, I'll be 150% behind him.
All right. Now let's get to the book. The mindfulness is what you are preaching, sort of, with your book and your tour. And you've been doing this for some time in Congress, trying to convince your colleagues. It's not a book that you would expect a politician, a sitting congressman, to write. Mm-hmm. A book about how you can use meditation and, you know, keeping your inner self, mm-hmm. being aware of your surroundings. It's not a book you expect a congressman like yourself to write. Why'd you write it?
Well, it gets back to Einstein's adage, you know, you can't solve problems from the same level of thinking that created them. And, you know, I was in 2008, was very, very busy, very hectic, a lot of statewide campaigns in 06, and was helping the Democrats take the House back in 06, raising money and doing a lot of different things, and just felt personally that I needed something to kind of give me some energy, help me focus better, and kind of guard against burnout, because I felt I was 35 years old, and I thought, you know, if I keep doing this, I think I'm going to get burnt out pretty quick. And stumbled onto mindfulness and went on a retreat with Jon Kabat-Zinn for 5 days, extended periods of silence.
Jon Kabat-Zinn is an expert in this from Massachusetts. He has written many books about meditation and being mindful.
Right, and started what is now the Center for Mindfulness. It was the Stress Reduction Clinic at UMass Hospital 30 years ago, just dealing with people that no other docs could handle. They didn't have any solutions. He would take them, do meditation with them, and really help a lot of people with chronic pain. So he runs this leadership retreat that I went on, had a very, very profound experience of just kind of, I checked my two Blackberries at the door, no phone calls, no writing, no reading, just kind of sitting, and your body decompresses and your mind quiets down and you just really begin to feel like, I think I did as an athlete on a couple of occasions, not nearly as much as I wanted to, but being in the zone. You know, we see athletes last week during the NCAA, this week we'll see it with the Masters, mm-hmm. of a complete in the moment, present moment awareness. And I felt that, and I immediately thought, this needs to be taught to our kids, given all the technology. The average teenager now sends 3,000 text messages a month. Young girls send like 4,000.
Tell me about
it. Bring the average up.
I have a 13-year-old,
well,
yes.
You may know. And healthcare, a lot of the issues in healthcare are caused by stress, heart disease, high blood pressure, ulcers, ADD, I mean, all of these things come from, a lot of them, the stress that we're under. And so if this was identified by the Center for Disease Control, we would have people in yellow suits and masks in all of our major institutions saying, hey, we got a major crisis on our hands.
So how do you practice it? Do you take time out in the morning and during the day? Do you have a certain routine where you meditate? Do you go to a yoga class every day,
every week?
Yeah,
no, I do it in the morning before I leave my house or my apartment in D.C. or the gym in D.C. Before I get into the day, before things start to get really hectic, I try to sit for 40 minutes, 45 minutes in the morning, and have found it very, very helpful to just balancing out the kind of stressors of the day. And the idea is to not just practice it, but later in your life when you're actually interacting, to be able to kind of just take a breath and kind of say, okay, wait a minute, things are getting a little out of control, or you get a thought in your head that is a negative thought that you could very easily react to, or a conflict mm-hmm. In work that you could very easily react to, mm-hmm. to try to just slow down a little bit.
What do your colleagues think? I'm sure you've mentioned this to your colleagues in Congress and folks who work on Capitol Hill. What do they do? They raise their eyebrows? Or they say, you know, maybe I ought to try that.
No,
what's the
you
reaction?
Know, it's really funny. It's because so many people are doing it now. I think most people are very, very curious about it because they've heard about it. You know, Google's doing it. Google has an entire program called Search Inside Yourself. Target, General Mills, you know, some of the major corporations in the country are doing it. The United States Marine Corps are beginning to ramp up programs and mindfulness for preventative treatment to learn how to handle the stress and the complexity of being on the battlefield. Phil Jackson did it with the Bulls and the Lakers, and he just happens to be the winningest coach in the NBA history.
Yeah, so, Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant didn't.
Well,
that
you
either.
Know, but keeping those guys focused yeah. and keeping those number of egos together, and I think the mindfulness had a lot to do with that. And so people are curious about what exactly it is. But I will tell you, and since the book has come out, it's been even more profound of people saying, God, I need something like that. Mm-hmm. What do you do? How do you do it? You know, just kind of like you asked me. And it's not just women. It's like it's been men. It's been 40-year-old, 45-year-old men who are saying, oh, my God, tell me what I got to do because I've got 3 kids and I'm trying to make money and I'm married. And, you know, it's just a lot of stress today for everybody.
Congressman Tim Ryan from the Youngstown area, he's in his fifth term, Democrat, and he's written a book called A Mindful Nation, How a Simple Practice Can Help Us Reduce Stress, Improve Performance, and Recapture the American Spirit. His book signing tonight at Easton.
Yeah.
Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
At Easton. What time?
7.
7 o'clock tonight yeah. at Easton if you want to
come on by,
see him and get a copy of the book. We'll take a break, and we'll come back and continue our conversation with Congressman Tim Ryan as All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the Supreme Court upholds invasive strip searches, even for those charged with the most minor crimes, including unpaid traffic fines. We'll explore. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. And you can support WOSU Public Media by becoming a volunteer. We're looking for volunteers to take phone calls of support from our listeners during the upcoming spring membership drive. If you're interested in becoming a volunteer, visit WOSU.org/volunteers or call 614-292-9678. 45 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly cloudy skies today and a high near 55. Clear skies tonight, a low of 35 degrees. Patchy frost for tomorrow morning, sunshine and a high of 58 in the afternoon. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Our guest is Congressman Tim Ryan from the Youngstown area. He's in his fifth term in Congress, and he's written a book about mindfulness and how meditation and, you know, looking into your inner self can help you handle the stresses of day-to-day life and the stresses of being a sitting congressman. Congressman, I want you to listen to this guy for a moment.
All right.
While all this is going on in Ohio, they want to cut the estate tax for the wealthiest people who live in the state of Ohio and ask the teacher to make the sacrifice. This is disrespectful and unfair to the workers in the state of Ohio.
That was you on the floor of the House criticizing Senate Bill 5, the public worker union limits that was defeated last fall. You know, we heard that clip. We heard the clip at the start of the show where you were criticizing the president over the Iraq war. You can get pretty worked up on the House floor, on the stump. Politics is a sport of passion. Can a mindful politician be successful?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think more successful. It, you know, all depends on how you define success. But if you enjoy your job, if you feel like you're serving the people, if you feel like you're contributing something positive, yeah, absolutely. And enjoy it more. I mean, I've enjoyed my job a lot more, even amidst the bad economy and the tough, you know, climate that it's been, because, you know, you appreciate things a little bit more and, you know, I'm with my constituents more and I feel connected to them more.
Can you still be as passionate as we heard in that clip when you're arguing for the positions you believe in? Can you still have that fire in the belly and be someone who practices mindfulness?
Absolutely. You know, like we were talking before the break, you know, this is something that athletes do. And, you know, you've got to go on the field and perform. But this is about being in the present moment. Sportsmanship and, you know, doesn't mean you don't play hard. Doesn't mean you don't play with a level of enthusiasm. It means you play honestly and fairly. And, you know, those are the guys I remember when I played, you know, football in high school and basketball. Those are the guys you respect. You know, they'll knock you down and they'll pick you right back up and get back in the huddle and come down and try to knock you down again the next play. So I think there's complete room. That's being alive as far as I can tell. You know, being on the field of battle, like Teddy Roosevelt's quote, you know, being on the field, mud, sweat, blood, tears, you know, that's being alive. And we don't always have the blood and the sweat in politics, but it gets close.
Yeah, you served on Jim Traficant's staff.
Yeah,
could he have used a little bit of mindfulness?
Well, you know,
I mean, seriously,
But
watching him, did that cause you to say, you know what, I'm not sure I want to go down his path where I get consumed by the job and become a real firebrand? I mean, how much of an influence did his tutelage of you as an aide on his staff influence your decision to pursue this?
Well, I guess I didn't know it at the time, but anyone you're with or you work for, you can learn from. Sometimes what to do, sometimes what not to do. I had another Jim in my life, and that was Jim Tressel, who recruited me out of high school to play at Youngstown State when he was the coach there. And the seeds he planted in me, I was a quarterback and he was the quarterback coach. So I got to spend a lot of time for a year and a half with him. And he talked about focus and persistence and diligence and, you know, basically being in the present moment and being aware of what's going on around you. So, you know, Jim Tressel, you learn a lot from, you know, the Jim Traficants of the world, you learn a lot from too, like what not to do. And that has, you know, certainly I don't want to be a burnt out anything that's just going through the motions.
Our guest, Congressman Tim Ryan from Youngstown, talking about mindfulness and how it can help us in our daily lives and maybe solve some of the nation's problems. You write that mindfulness can have a tangible impact on things like energy policy. Mm-hmm. How can mindfulness help us cope with, well, I suppose the stress of $4 a gallon gas, but how can it help yeah. long term? How can it help with our energy policy?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of things. Like, for example, you know, a lot of the food that we buy goes to waste. I think it's like 25% goes to waste. So all of the energy that goes into the food that we buy, how it's processed, how it's transported, the water that's used, fresh water to, you know, make the food, all that goes to waste. And so I just think, and this isn't to say I'm perfect or I'm, you know, mm-hmm. but I'm saying if we slow down when we're at the grocery store, like, are we really going to use that or we're going to throw it away again for the, you know, 15th time this year? And it goes to waste. I think about, you know, just getting in the car and just going just to go. Like, do we really need to? You know, these kind of things. And then I think, quite frankly, really paying attention to what the dynamics are in the world today. We're going to have 2 billion more people in the world the next 40 years, I think. All want cars in China and India. Mm-hmm. They all want to be Americans. And so I think if we just slow down and say, can we really drill our way out of this? Just by slowing down, I just hope that we can take a kind of holistic look at the situations that we're in. So I think it can have an effect.
We welcome your phone calls, 292-8513, if you'd like to discuss mindfulness with Congressman Tim Ryan from Youngstown. Also, we look for your emails at allsides@wosu.org. Do you practice mindfulness? Do you meditate? Do you go to yoga class? Do you just take time out of your day to stop and slow down a bit? Give us a call, 292-8513, and share your story here on All Sides. Economic policy kind of goes along the same line. You think that, you know, slowing down, taking stock of where you are can help mm-hmm. with our economic struggles right now.
Well, I think it could reestablish our values as to what's really important, you know. And when we're stressed out, I think we get a skewed vision of what is really, really important. But part of the stress is coming from, I think, an economic system that is breeding inequality right now. I think in so many ways our economic system is inhumane. In the country of our wealth, to have the concentration of poverty in certain cities across our state and across our country is inhumane for this to happen, and to not have the resources for police and fire, basic services for our communities. So, you know, it's kind of like what comes first, the chicken or the egg. But I do believe that if we slow down, we're going to say, wait a minute, how can we have all of these economic troubles and we don't have the political wherewithal to ask Warren Buffett to help us? Like, that's really an argument that's happening in the United States today. You know, I think most people are pretty reasonable about this stuff, but it's going so fast. Oh, those are the job creators. Well, you know, Warren Buffett's going to either create jobs or not, whether it's not going to matter if he pays a little bit more in taxes. So I just feel like by slowing down, we'll reassess our values. And I talk a lot in A Mindful Nation about my grandparents, who were first-generation Italian-Americans, who, you know, grew up next door to each other, then got married. But it was a different life where family was a priority. Dinner with the family every night was a priority. Going on the weekends in the summer to Waddell Park and having a picnic with all of the family was a priority. You know, they would get done at work at 3 o'clock and go into the garden or spend time with the kids. And it's like, I think that's what the American people want right now, whether it's so the policies are child care or what, you know, what are the health care so that you're not working a second job to pay for health care costs for your family, worrying about kids being sick or what would happen. I think if we slow down enough, we're going to say, is this really what we want? Consumerism, rampant materialism, the marketing, you know, it's like we're all on the treadmill going a million miles an hour and nobody's happy about it.
To really affect change, how many people have to use this technique and to do what you suggest? You mentioned that, you know, the Chinese and Indians from Asia, they all want cars. I mean, it's going to be hard to get 7 billion people to do mindfulness to solve the world's problems. What's the critical mass here?
Well, I don't know. I really don't. You know, I did it because it helped me, and then I started to see scientists researching this stuff, teachers, healthcare workers, and it having effect on people. And I want this to get out because I want it to help my constituents who are suffering a great deal right now. And so the system may not change as quickly as we want, healthcare, economics, inequality, all of these things that I advocate for in Congress. But why shouldn't they have the same tools as the Marines have to try to balance their stress and help themselves out?
Let me get to the phones. And Gary, you're on the air with Congressman Tim Ryan on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you for taking my call. Congressman Ryan, I heard what you said, and I'm not in total agreement with it, unfortunately, specifically about the statement about the Supreme Court and what they may do with the health care law. I find that the Supreme Court was set up as an independent body by the Constitution as a check on both the Congress and the President, each of which are also independent, presumably. And you didn't consider it, and the Democrats did not consider it to be an activist court when they passed Roe versus Wade. And by the way, I'm not totally against abortion, but I want to tell you that I don't see any difference between that and this court if they decide to throw this law out. I don't like this law, and there are several reasons for it, but that's not the point.
Let's get the congressman to respond, but thanks for the call, Gary. Go ahead.
Well, I guess we just have a difference of opinion there. You know, I think... the individual mandate, from what I can tell, seems to be clearly constitutional. As I said, many conservative think tanks advocated for it. So now, because there's so much pressure to repeal Obamacare, I mean, we'll see where it falls. Yeah. Who knows?
When you talk about mindfulness, you link it to a lot of your own political philosophy, mm-hmm. mainly on the Democrat-liberal side. Can Republicans be mindful and succeed?
Yeah, of course. In the Washington Post article today, a very dear friend of mine, John Sullivan, who is a Tea Party Republican in Oklahoma, and this is, we're in the South, mm-hmm. We sit together sometimes. We co-chair the House Addiction and Recovery Caucus. I think Republicans should be advocating for this because it is low cost, it is simple, and it will bring down health care costs and prevent a lot of problems from happening that are going to be budget problems in the long run. So I think if you're interested in reducing the deficit, if you're interested in improving performance in our schools, why not help advance a basic, simple, fundamental human technique or human quality of paying attention and teaching our teachers these qualities to bring and cultivate in their students. So Republicans should be for this as much as anybody. And we open up the book with a quote from Reverend Jim Wallace, who says, "We don't need to go further to the left. We don't need to go further to the right. We all need to go a little bit deeper." And that's where the solutions are.
And that's kind of the underlying theme I got from the book, is that this will lead to more level-headedness, more compromise, a meeting of the minds, rather than the divisive partisan politics we have in Washington right now.
I hope. And it will come from the constituents. It will come from the people. This will be organic. It won't be from the top down. But it gets into the brain science, if we could for a second. You have the older part of your brain is your amygdala. And that is where you handle your fear, your anger, fight or flight. And information, when you're not in fear or anger, your amygdala is not all hopped up, will pass through your amygdala and go to your prefrontal cortex, where you have your working memory, your attention span, you balance your emotions, all the high-order thinking skills that you need for functioning, good scores in math and science and other things. When your amygdala is really activated, information doesn't pass through it. It's all processed in the amygdala. So when you have levels of stress, like you're a soldier that has PTSD, or you're a kid who's growing up in a violent neighborhood or has some kind of mental, physical, emotional abuse, you have a very active amygdala. And so these kids can't process the information. And what mindfulness does is it helps teach the kids how to calm down their amygdala and therefore be able to process information. It's instead of yelling at them to pay attention, you're going to teach them actually how to pay attention. And it's a key difference.
Russell, you're on the air with Congressman Tim Ryan on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Hi, Congressman. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just want to say I absolutely agree. I think we need to slow down, particularly way too many trips to one block, two block destinations in cars. One should be walking or getting on a bike. And I think that helps us out with energy, and I think that also helps us out with health care as well.
Right.
And I appreciate your sentiment, and you have my support. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Russell. Thanks for the call. Tim Ryan is our guest for just a few more minutes here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Couple more minutes. You admit in your book that you can bug people with your rampant enthusiasm.
I'm half Irish and half Italian, so that should come to no surprise.
So have you had instances where you say, I don't need this stuff, I don't believe in this stuff, I'm just going to go forge ahead? And
Me saying that? People?
No, people have reacted to you that way.
Oh, you know what? I hopefully have learned a little bit, but I know I can still do it. And that's why I really wanted to back this up with the science. And there's an entire chapter at the beginning of the book, in the third chapter, about the science, because I don't want it to be, oh, Tim's excited about it, he wrote a book and he wants to tell you all about it. Yeah. I want to tell you about Richie Davidson at the University of Madison, Wisconsin. I want to tell you about Sarah Lasser at Harvard. I want to talk to you about, you know, folks at UCLA and Stanford and Emory and, you know, all at UMass and University of Michigan. Am I allowed to say that?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, some of these great institutions, University of Miami, that have studied this. And Sarah Lasser, a study that just came out of Harvard a couple weeks ago, months ago, I was talking about the amygdala. After 8 weeks of a mindfulness-based stress reduction course that Jon Kabat-Zinn started, after just 8 weeks, the part of your amygdala that handles all of that fear and anger actually gets thinner after just 8 weeks of a mindfulness-based stress reduction course. So it actually changes your brain in the direction of calmer, more well-being, more focus, more attention, all of the things that are necessary. And quickly, there's a study in the book about psoriasis. Your body naturally wants to heal itself. That's what it does. And when we inject a lot of stress into our body, it can prevent the body from healing itself. It inflames the body. So they did a study, Jon Kabat-Zinn and others did a study, with psoriasis patients. One of the treatments is you go into a light box. So they had a group just go into the light box, and they had a group go into the light box and practice mindfulness. The mindfulness group needed four times less the treatments in the light box than the normal group. It was so significant, they thought they screwed the study up. They went back and did it again, got the same results. So from a policy perspective, and to your listeners, how can this help us with healthcare costs? Do the math on how much it costs the psoriasis patient for every trip that they had to go in there. They had to go in four times less. What's that number? Times the number of psoriasis patients in the country, you start to see significant savings. And that's not even the drugs for depression, ADD, you know, ulcers, heart disease, high blood pressure, that you can reduce your own blood pressure, I mean, with this stuff. So,
interesting stuff. Congressman Tim Ryan.
I'm getting enthusiastic about it, am I?
Right. That's good. So you can still have the passion and the mindfulness, right?
I hope so.
Tim Ryan, congressman from Youngstown, author of the book A Mindful Nation, Simple Practice Can Help Us Reduce Stress, Improve Performance, and Recapture the American Spirit. Thanks for joining us here on All
Great
Sides.
Great to be with you, Mike.
Appreciate it. When we come back to folks that perhaps could use a little more mindfulness, Governor Kasich and now outgoing GOP Party Chair Kevin DeWine. We'll talk to Joe Hallett about what's going on in the Ohio Republican Party when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
Receive daily updates from WOSU by liking our station on Facebook or by following WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our daily News Loop e-newsletter. Visit WOSU.org/email to sign up.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay with us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides begins, differing perspectives on the treatment of mental illness in America. That's the discussion during All Sides from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the general election taking shape between President Obama and Mitt Romney. Also, what's next for Ohio's sex offender law? Those topics and more on Columbus on the Record tomorrow night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. 46 degrees with partly sunny skies, a high of 55 today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 35. Patchy frost tomorrow morning, sunshine in the afternoon, a high near 60. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Capitol Square and the State House is buzzing this morning. The head of the state Republican Party, a man who led the Republican recapture of the Ohio House, the recapture of the governor's office, the recapture of all statewide offices, he's out this morning, or at least come next week. Ohio GOP Chairman Kevin DeWine says he will step down next week, forced out of his position by Governor Kasich and his allies. Joining us now is a man who's been on top of this story since the get-go, Joe Hallett, senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch. Joe, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks, Mike.
Given that resume, and you note this morning in the paper that he has never lost a race, why is Kevin DeWine out as the state party chairman?
Well, simply stated, it's because Governor John Kasich wants to take over the party. The reasoning actually has kind of been thin throughout this, and hard really to understand given DeWine's record. But essentially, I think there's a couple of factors here. One is Kasich is not the first governor to try to take over the party. Jim Rhodes tried to oust Ray Bliss in the 1960s at a time when Bliss was one of the most successful chairmen in the country. And then in the 1990s, George Voinovich tried to oust Bob Bennett, who went on to become the most successful chairman in Ohio history. So this is not new. Kasich, like a lot of the governors who have tried this, wants to make the party more Kasich-centric, wants the party more focused on his political future. One of the beefs with DeWine by the Kasich folks is that he didn't go out of his way to really boost the Kasich governorship. There were complaints that DeWine sunk too much money into other statewide races, namely the Secretary of State and Auditor's races, which were needed to win control of the State Apportionment Board. And indeed, the Republicans did win both of those seats, which probably turned out to be a good investment because now they've redrawn congressional and legislative lines for the next 10 years that almost ensure their majorities in those bodies.
Yeah, I can see if Kevin DeWine had lost on that strategy, but it worked.
It did work. There's some more irony in this, in that John Kasich has never been a party guy. I've had numerous conversations with him during the campaign, and he kind of held the party at arm's length. He said, you know, they do what they do, I do what I do. And so for them now to say, for he and his political aides to say that the party was perhaps not as supportive enough is kind of ironic. The DeWine people also say that there are folks around Kasich, lobbyists, who want to have the governor win control of the party so that they effectively can control who the next chairman is. Of course, the Kasich people deny that. They say that DeWine has been a divisive leader. He's not brought the party together. He's played favorites, and he's punished candidates who are not his favorite. So This is just a messy internecine battle that the likes of which I've never seen, because it has gotten nastier than any kind of intra-party fight in my experience.
I'm speaking with Joe Hallett, senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch, about the news today that Kevin DeWine is out, or will be out soon, as the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party, forced out by after a confrontation with Governor Kasich and his allies. Joe, to Capitol Hill, to Capitol Square insiders and to lawmakers and those tight in the political establishment, this is big news. Why does this matter to the average person out there who's going to work today?
Well, I think it matters particularly this year because we have a very important presidential race and a race for the U.S. Senate that I think is going to be extremely competitive between the incumbent Democrat, Sherrod Brown, and the challenger, Josh Mandel, the Republican treasurer of Ohio. And the candidates need very strong structures, party infrastructures, to help them do a number of things: raise money, do all of the get out the vote stuff, like
direct mailings and stuff like that. Yeah,
door to door. So they need united, cohesive, strong parties going forward. So not to suggest that that still won't happen on the Republican side or the Democratic side, which is having its own internal
politics. Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute.
but I think when people see all of this happening, they just kind of shake their heads and see more dysfunction in politics. You know, here are these people who are at the same party, they can't get along. In the state of Ohio, currently, there are 7.7 million registered voters, and only 10.5% of them are registered Republicans, and only 9%, a little over 9%, are registered Democrats. So you look at the polls, people have a dim view of both parties anyway. You know, the parties are trying to gather support to raise money to support the candidacies and agendas, and I think when the average folks see this going on, you know, they kind of give it a sideways glance, but it just confirms probably their ill feeling already toward these political parties as entities that really aren't interested in me anyway. They're all about power and enhancing, you know, their own nests, feathering their own nests.
We're speaking with Joe Hallett, senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch, about the intra-party fight on the GOP side right now between Governor John Kasich and outgoing now GOP Chair Kevin DeWine. 292-8513, if you'd like to join in our conversation. We have just about 10 minutes left, but if you have a quick question, we'll get to you. Joe, is this a clash of personalities, or is it a deeper clash of philosophy? I ask, is this a Tea Party versus more moderate Republican clash that's going on here?
No, I don't think so, but that is an element of it. I think this is more a clash of personalities, and it's more about power and controlling resources. But there is a Tea Party element to this. The Tea Party did not support Kevin DeWine. I think it felt that he has not been supportive of its agenda or its candidates, and they were openly hostile to his continuing on as chairman. And meanwhile, the more moderate, the establishment Republicans were supportive of DeWine. We had statements of support from both Senator Rob Portman today and from Rentz, previously chairman of the Republican National Committee. Both gave her statements that they felt DeWine had done a good job. So, and I think that's the viewpoint of the more establishment Republicans, but not of the folks to the right, to the far right, particularly the Tea Party folks who really don't like the establishment party anyway, but certainly didn't feel very good about DeWine.
So who's next? Bob Bennett, the former chair, is going to fill out on an interim role. How long will his interim role last? And, you know, the name that you hear a lot is Doug Price, the Franklin County GOP chair. Is he the next state chair?
I don't think so. Doug was very instrumental in the effort to oust Kevin DeWine. But Doug has a very lucrative lobbying business going right now, and I don't think he wants to step down and
doesn't
take
want
a pay,
the pay cut. Yeah,
as party chairman, you know, he is the Franklin County Republican chairman. I think he wants to remain there, but I don't. He has told me personally that he does not want to become the next state chairman. One name you hear. Just rumor-wise, is former Attorney General Betty Montgomery. And frankly, I haven't been able to talk to Betty personally to know whether or not she truly is interested.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob Bennett, as I mentioned earlier, is the most successful chairman in party history when you look at the one loss record. He's also, I think, the longest-serving chairman ever. And he will come back. He can step right in. I mean, he knows exactly how to run the party. It's only been since 2009 that he hasn't run the party. He's a member of the State Central Committee. So my guess is that he will be there until January when the next election of a chairman is officially scheduled. And he will help get the party as seamlessly as possible through both the Republican convention in Tampa in late August and through the November election. So it is a good move for the Kasich folks to convince Bob Bennett to take over, at least on an interim basis.
Our guest is Joe Hallett, senior editor with the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about the battle in the Republican Party between John Kasich and Kevin DeWine, who announced just last night that he is going to leave in April, not wait to the end of his term in January. Let's go to the phones. And Amber, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, hi. I just wanted to say thank you for the good dialogue. Of course, I live up here in the land of Mr. Kasich. And I don't really believe that this helps with the general feeling in the country. I'm a registered independent, so one of the 80%, I guess. And I just think it also kind of casts a shadow, similar to what we see at the national level. And I don't know that it's really productive or that it helps to have civil conversation. It just looks like another fight.
Yeah, it goes to what you were saying earlier, Joe, that it adds to that feeling of divisiveness that the voters, especially independent voters, feel right now.
Yeah, there's. I think that's true. And there's one thing that I think just exacerbated that whole feeling was, I think a few weeks ago when Kevin DeWine announced that, okay, my compromise is that I'll continue through this term, but I won't seek re-election in January to a new two-year term. I really believe that he felt that would mollify the Kasich forces and they could put the fight behind them and get through this election. But right away, the Kasich operatives, Doug Price in particular, said that's not good enough. He's got to go right now. You know, the party is so broken that we need to get rid of him now. In my opinion, a good argument for him not to stay, at least through the election, was never really articulated, and I still don't know why that wasn't good enough for the Kasich allies. But to the broader point, I think she's exactly right that this just creates more ill feeling toward both parties.
And speaking of both parties, Republicans aren't alone in this type of squabble. There's word that and some union folks are asking that the head of the Democratic Party, Chris Redfern, the chairman of the D's, step aside.
Yeah, there's some growing support for that movement, although Chris has said that he's confident that he has an easy majority to win re-election as party chairman. Some of the folks, one of the cases being made against him is that he's simultaneously running for a seat in the Ohio House, and his critics are wondering how he can devote proper attention to both jobs, particularly when the priority this year is to get Barack Obama elected in Ohio and Senator Brown reelected. Today, we've had three labor unions come out against Redfern in support of Anthony Giardini, who is the Loring County Republican chairman. Today, a fourth labor union came out and announced they didn't have confidence in Redfern and wanted Giardini elected. And they were joined by Jennifer Bruner, the former Ohio Secretary of State, who said that it is time to move on from Redfern's leadership. And she also endorsed Giardini. So,
how much sway do those unions have in the party establishment?
Well, they, you know, the party relies on labor for its funding. These are not the real heavy hitters, I don't think, in as far as funding the party. They certainly contribute, and they, you know, in the elections they provide a lot of ground troops.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the more union support that gathers against Chris's re-election, you know, the more important it becomes, because if there is a pretty profound threat to the finances of the Democratic Party and to the human resources it needs in elections, then he could be in trouble.
But
my guess is I think he'll probably have enough support to be re-elected, but we will know very soon, because the party central committee is going to hold its meeting on April 11th.
All right. Thanks very much, Joe Hallett, senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch, for joining us here on All Sides. This is Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann Fisher today on All Sides on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org.